Iran joined the Shanghai Cooperation Organization as a full member on July 4th, with Tehran having intensified its diplomatic efforts with friends and adversaries alike in recent months, seeking to improve its economy, project strength, and reduce the impact of Western sanctions. In this regard, while addressing the opening ceremony of the virtual summit, the Chinese leader, Xi Jinping, emphasized Beijing's strategic position by urging the leaders of Russia, Iran, and other allies to boost ties and resist Western sanctions. And in his turn, the Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi characterized the Islamic Republic's membership as a foreign policy achievement in the face of Western bloc's attempts to isolate Iran and noted that Islamic Republic's membership will support collective regional security while expanding ties and communications and strengthening unity among member states. Iran's SCO membership proves Tehran's commitment towards a more balanced, smart, active and dynamic foreign policy and to the idea of global multilateralism. For a closer look at Iran's accession into the Eurasian Organization, highlighting potential opportunities for Tehran and speculations about the future of the SCO after the inclusion of the Islamic Republic, please join us on this edition of Iran Today. Iran's full-fledged membership was announced by India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi as he conveyed his best wishes to the president and people of Iran during the recent SCO Leaders Summit hosted by India. New countries joining the group underlines the importance of the group, Modi said. Regional security, economy, food security, climate change, and the situation in Afghanistan were also on the summit's agenda, the Indian leader said in his opening remarks. Prime Minister Modi chaired the SCO meeting virtually. Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi, Chinese President Xi Jinping, Russian President Vladimir Putin, and other regional leaders joined him via video conferencing.
It seems that the discussion of Iran's membership in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization may sometimes be exaggerated, but the reality is that Iran, as a regional power, Iran naturally needs this kind of regional cooperation. Iran's presence in such institutions and agreements in the region can increase Iran's maneuvering power and give Iran an important and central role in regional decisions and actually help to manage Iran's problems at the regional level at least. On the other hand, we know that due to the pressure that the United States is putting on Iran, and it is trying to isolate Iran, and the most important part of it is the American sanctions, this membership in the SCO can be a countermeasure against the West.
Moreover, in comments made later on to the leaders in the SCO summit, Russian President Vladimir Putin also welcomed Iran's accession as the ninth full member of the influential Security and Trade Alliance, saying, "In less than 2 years, our Iranian partners completed all the necessary procedures, and now our shared task is to help our colleagues to productively join in the multifaceted activities taking place within the framework of the SCO." The Russian leader also reiterated his country's opposition to Western dominance in intra-regional relations and said Moscow would back trade accords between SCO nations in local currencies in an attempt to blunt all external sanctions and pressures.
In the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, all the countries that are members are against the unilateral sanctions of the United States, and therefore they are looking for ways to develop trade among their members of this organization. This trade can be done with national currencies. It can be done by building banking network that is not related to the American and Western banking systems, or it can be realized through mechanisms such as barter trades.
Iranian President Ayatollah Raisi also addressed the 23rd virtual summit of the SCO and spoke of Tehran's desire to shape a fair regional order fortified by the resistance movement. He warned against the dominance of the dollar in global exchanges, saying de-dollarization is a pivotal necessity to form a just international system.
There is a key point about this organization that should be noted. The members of this organization have a common opinion in the field of foreign policy, and that is to follow the approach of multilateralism in the international system. In fact, they confront the American unilateralism in the international arena and thus are determined to develop cooperation further.
Resistance is an inherent element of the Islamic Revolution's identity. Therefore, Iranian officials strongly believe in the necessity of a resistance-oriented view in the foreign policy of the Islamic Republic. They maintain that this policy has been triumphant in providing deterrence against hegemonic Western powers, and the expansion of ties with the SCO nations as a successful fruition of this approach. Iran has several economic and geostrategic interests in the region, and Tehran's geopolitical position, population, energy supplies, connectivity potential, human resource, and soft power enables it to offer exceptional opportunities.
Practically, with Iran's membership in the Shanghai Organization, Iran becomes the hub of world trade. Today, for example, all Russian naval bases are surrounded by NATO and America. Iran is the most reliable way for the goods to pass. Therefore, Russia is trying to set up a corridor from north to south. Regarding China, we can see that the most reliable route is the historical Silk Road, the pass through Iran, Iraq, and Syria. Today, the Chinese have come to the conclusion that Turkey cannot be trusted because it's a member of NATO and adheres to NATO agreements.
However, over the years, the Iranian economy has suffered on account of illegal sanctions imposed by the U.S. West bloc. The Trump administration alone imposed more than 3,900 sanctions. At the peak of Trump's maximum pressure campaign, Iranian crude oil exports fell to 500,000 barrels per day or less. Since then, Biden's Treasury Department has issued 10 new rounds of sanctions tied to Iranian energy sales.
The fact is that the American government has made the effectiveness of this pressure tool decrease by overusing the sanctions tool and with their addiction to sanctioning countries. This means that the sword of sanctions due to excessive use is not as sharp as before. The statistics of the American sources show that today 30 countries in the world are included in this network of American sanctions under different titles, and the Americans themselves have reached a point to rethink their policy of sanctions.
Yet these recent efforts have not had a noticeable impact on Iranian export numbers or the country's decision-making progress, according to experts. In fact, the recent trends have been sending the signal to oil markets that the risk of handling Iranian oil has declined now. Of course, oil plays a major role in the Islamic Republic's ability to generate revenue and access hard currency. In the current fiscal year, that is from March 2022 till March 2023, the country expected to export 1.4 million barrels per day at $70 per barrel average, accounting for about one-third of its total revenue. Therefore, strengthening trade can play a significant role in providing Iran's sanction-hit economy with the support it needs. SCO can provide the Iranian economy with a huge boost via resilient trade. It can promote commerce, increase the flow of investments, spur growth in tourism, and access to an alternate system in the global financial network.
Actually, even today, if the United States decides to lift all sanctions, we have no goods that we want to export to Europe or America. Of course, let's skip pistachios, crude oil, carpets, and saffron. In fact, Iran becomes an importer of European and American goods. Whereas, when we look at the countries around us, the countries of East Asia, Central Asia, Africa, and Latin America, we see that these are potential markets for our goods. In spite of all the criticism leveled at Iran's automobile industry, many of these countries are buyers of the same Iranian cars in bulk. Well, naturally, here we create a space to interact with our own markets.
Moreover, Iran's rich oil and gas resources make Tehran a viable member to participate in the SCO energy exchanges. Iran was the fifth largest oil producer in OPEC in 2022, accounting for 24% of oil reserves in West Asia and 12% in the world. Through the SCO, Iran could gain significant access to the Central Asian republics, which can be potential export markets for Iranian goods as well. In 2022, Iran surpassed $37 billion U.S. dollars in trade, with other SCO members accounting for 30% of its total foreign trade. In the meantime, Iran's inclusion in the SCO has increased its substantive value. As the experts suggest, the SCO now has all the necessary players it requires to solve regional challenges. In light of that, developing further bilateral or multilateral relations with significant members of the SCO, namely Russia, India, and China, is crucial for promoting Tehran's interests in the region. Since the 2018 reimposition of U.S. sanctions, the Islamic Republic was also disconnected from the SWIFT financial messaging service, which is a key international banking access point for international transactions. In response, Tehran was able to connect 52 branches of Iranian banks with 106 foreign banks using Russia's system for transfer of financial messages.
The fact is that the world is not limited to SWIFT. These countries themselves are producing new financial instruments. They can use this tool either bilaterally or regionally. Now there is a joint messenger between Iran and Russia, and financial transactions are being done through this messenger. Iran itself has a native messenger called SEPAM that can establish financial transactions. Of course, we still have a long way to go to replace SWIFT, but it's not like the world will stop if the SWIFT turns its back on us.
Geopolitical observers indicate that these events, and particularly the membership of the SCO, is further indication that countries are willing to engage with the Islamic Republic, and attempts by Western bloc to isolate Iran have failed. Over the past two decades, the SCO has emerged as an important platform for peace, prosperity, and development in the entire Eurasia region. The Shanghai Alliance encompasses a vast stretch of the globe from Moscow to Beijing and includes around 50% of the world's population when adding the observer and dialogue partner nations. The combined GDP of the SCO accounts for approximately 20% of the world's total. And with Iran now abroad, the bloc will have control over around 20% of the world's oil reserves.
As you said, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization was originally a security and political entity in nature to resolve regional disputes. But this settlement of regional disputes was actually the first step for wider cooperation that also includes economic fields. In fact, the main concern of many countries today is that how they can use this structure, this organization, to expand economic cooperation. In the framework of this organization, there are some institutions such as the Business Advisory Council, where members discuss the fields of economic cooperation. The discussion of the Federation of Member Countries Banks is another part of the agreement, which is related to the promotion of the economy. Shanghai Development Bank is another department that was formed to finance the projects supported by this organization. These are very valuable features.
According to the International Energy Agency, Iran produced 2.87 million barrels of oil per day in May 2023. That's about 3% of global supply. Also, its crude exports exceeded 1.5 million barrels per day in May, showing the highest monthly export rate since 2018. On the other hand, geopolitical experts indicate that Iran's entry into the SCO, plus expanded relations with Russia and China, has provided Tehran more leverage in its negotiations with the U.S. and EU over its nuclear case. The remaining unresolved issue today has to do with the fact that the U.S. does not want to make a firm commitment.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
There's plenty more right after a quick look at some news excerpts. Welcome to the news section of the program, where I will go over news excerpts from different news websites, starting with Financial Tribune. Neighbors account for half of Iran's trade in 2 months. Iran traded 13.14 million tons of goods worth $7.46 billion, excluding crude oil exports, with its 15 neighboring countries sharing land or sea borders during the first 2 months of the current Iranian year. That is from March 21st till May 21st, according to Ruhollah Latifi, the spokesman of the Iranian House of Industry, Mine and Trade's Trade Development Commission. The figures account for over 51% of tonnage and 48.3% of the value of Iran's foreign trade during the period. Exports to neighboring countries stood at 10.15 million tons, worth $3.73 billion, unchanged in terms of weight, but down 17% in value compared with last year's corresponding period, IRNA reported. Total exports stood at 21 million tons, worth $7.51 billion during the period. Al-Mayadeen reads, Iran-Iraq discuss development of joint oil projects. Tehran and Baghdad are working on enhancing their bilateral ties, including in the areas of investment in and development of joint oil fields, as well as the export of technical and engineering services from Iran to Iraq, Iranian media reported on Saturday. Iranian Oil Minister Javad Oji and his Iraqi counterpart Hayyan Abdulghani held a meeting in the Austrian capital of Vienna, with the two discussing the implementation of joint oil projects. Moreover, the two sides stressed the importance of expanding bilateral ties in oil, gas, and oil derivatives. Both parties exchanged their views on the future of gas markets in the world, as well as investment opportunities, the prediction of gas prices, and cooperation between gas-exporting countries in the global market. According to Reuters, Iranian and Saudi energy ministers meet in Vienna. Iranian oil minister Javad Oji and Saudi Arabia counterpart Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman met on the sidelines of the OPEC conference in Vienna on Wednesday, the official IRNA news agency reported on Thursday. The two countries had renewed diplomatic ties in March in a deal negotiated by China, opening the way to potential bilateral cooperation in different fields. Oji and bin Salman discussed the bilateral issues between Iran and Saudi Arabia, including investment in the oil and gas industry and exploring the possibility of joint investments, IRNA said. Issues such as hydrocarbon trade and the development of common fields were also among the topic of discussions. This brings us to the end of this section. Please stay tuned as we go back to our main narrative. There have been major changes in the geopolitical landscape of late. Mainly, Biden's chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan has opened up space for other regional powers to fill the vacuum. Some analysts say that Russia, China, Pakistan, and Iran are coming together in the next chapter. Meanwhile, Chinese investments and influence is filling the void in the Central Asian region. In fact, China has become more assertive in various situations on the global stage. Accordingly, Iran's membership in the Eurasian Organization aligns with China's expanding economic and geopolitical footprints in West Asia. Tehran's membership unlocks new opportunities for Beijing to expand its regional activity and promote its geoeconomic Belt and Road project. By strengthening relations with Iran, Beijing has diversified its energy sources as well. Over the past several years, China has become Iran's number one oil customer and trading partner.
Today, there is a big difference between Americans and Europeans, in which European statesmen are complaining that America has caused Iran to move towards the east with its policies. And they have lost this big Iranian market, and they accuse America. They say that he wants to interact with Iran behind the scenes. Finally, European countries are worried and demand participation in the Iranian market. Of course, it should not be forgotten that this is the new policy of Iran under the new government that has caused Westerners to try to solve their problems with Iran.
Private Chinese refiners in the Shandong province are estimated to have bought 800,000 barrels per day of Iranian crude oil and condensate in March, and tanker tracking companies estimate a 20% increase in March on overall Iranian imports into China. The two states have also established wide-ranging ties via non-energy economic links, arms sales, and defense cooperation. In a sense, Iran has reached out beyond its traditional strategic ally, Russia, these days to expand and improve its international relations. In light of that, in March this year, it signed a China-brokered deal to reestablish diplomatic relations with its old regional rival, Saudi Arabia. There will be some who see these events as diminishing the perception of U.S. power. Iran has recently taken part in vigorous diplomatic drives across the world, deepening friendships with neighbors and partners in various regions, particularly Latin America. Tehran has also asked to join the BRICS group, which includes Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa.
In this direction, special attention has been paid to Latin America in the past, and a special kind of cooperation has taken place between Iran and countries such as Venezuela, Nicaragua, and Cuba. And all of this is an opportunity to benefit from it. Paying attention to Africa and the countries of this continent is also among the priorities of the current administration and parliament. We hosted the ambassadors of African countries many times in the Islamic Council. The president also plans to visit some African countries. In this direction, important steps have been taken in foreign policy.
Following the approval of Iran as a full-fledged member of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, a political insider close to the Iranian president said that being a member of BRICS will be the next step in Iran's foreign policy. The original acronym BRICS was coined to describe fast-growing economies that would collectively dominate the global economy by 2050. It is estimated that the BRICS countries have about 26.7% of the world's land surface and 41.5% of the global population. Currently, the combined GDP of the BRICS countries is $26.03 trillion. There is also a strong discussion of de-dollarization among the BRICS nations as of late.
The dollarization can naturally have a very heavy loss for America. Those who observe economic issues know that today the United States has more than $35,000 billion in foreign debt, and this debt is divided among different countries whose foreign exchange reserves are provided by dollars. And naturally, when this foreign exchange reserves decreases, it will have a terrible result for America. Today, according to statistics, foreign exchange reserves of countries have decreased from dollars to about 56%. This means disaster. This means that all these debts will return to America and the American economy will face collapse.
A few days ago, Iran's foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdollahian, said that the members of the BRICS group of emerging economies have welcomed the Islamic Republic's potential accession to the powerful bloc.
Therefore, regional cooperation provides Iran with a special opportunity, and Iran also pays special attention to it. By pursuing membership in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, we are actually paying attention to the east of Iran, but our regional cooperation is not limited to the east. In the north, Iran is pursuing and developing its cooperation in Eurasia, or in the south, it has given an idea to cooperate with the countries of the Persian Gulf region to establish a regional peace and dialogue forum between the northern and southern countries of the Persian Gulf. At the same time, Iran has hosted the Economic Cooperation Organization, or ECO, since the past, which has been a unique opportunity with the membership of Pakistan, Turkey, and some other Central Asian countries. All this at the regional level means that Iran cannot be limited.
Moreover, in January, Iran and the Eurasian Economic Union also signed an agreement for a free trade zone. The EAEU includes Armenia, Belarus, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, and Russia. The free trade zone agreement that covers the vast Eurasian region spreading from the borders of Eastern Europe to Western China is possible by the end of the year, according to local media.
We know that there are many political competitions in the region. After the collapse of the Soviet Union, many powers tried to be present and influence the Caucasus region. This competition over this region has several reasons. One of them is the geopolitical position of this region. Another reason is the geoeconomic and energy potentials of this region. The energy resources that exist in the region and the path of energy transfer are so important that they cannot be compared. All this can cause a heavy competition to be formed in this region. Iran has been present in the Caucasus region since ancient times. In fact, parts of this region belonged to Iran. Our cultural roots and civilizations are the same.
EAEU market comprises more than 184 million customers, and over the past year, its trade turnover with Iran increased by 20%. As part of the agreement, Iran and the EAEU approved zero tariffs on 90% of goods. The free trade zone agreement will increase the Iranian-Armenian economic partnership, strengthen Tehran's position in the Caucasus, and counter the presence of Israel and other countries threatening Iranian interests in the Caucasus region.
That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Please do tune in same time next week and each week after. Don't forget to leave your comments and topic requests. Till next time, take care.
In the limelight.
U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has warned an economic downturn in the United States cannot be ruled out yet. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to RT, U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has warned that the economy is still at risk of a recession, while expressing concern over persistently high inflation in the U.S. In an interview with CBS show Face the Nation over the weekend, she said it's appropriate and normal for growth to be low. When asked about a potential recession following the June jobs report, which was the weakest since December 2020, and showed that the U.S. economy was adding fewer jobs than in previous months, Yellen said it's not completely off the table. U.S. inflation has begun to ease. It was still high. After prices rose 4% year over year in May, double the U.S. Federal Reserve's 2% target, the Treasury Secretary noted. For months, the Federal Reserve has attempted to restrain inflation by hiking interest rates to their highest level in decades, slowing economic growth and prompting fears of a recession. Last month, the central bank decided not to raise interest rates further, but signaled that more rate hikes this year were possible, saying last week that a recession in 2023 is quite likely, but probably won't be deep or prolonged. According to Forbes, rising interest rates, high inflation, an inverted yield curve, and an unexpected banking crisis have all been cited as reasons that a recession could be imminent in the United States. The New York Fed recession probability indicator suggests there is a 68.2% chance of a U.S. recession sometime in the next 12 months. That's the highest reading in more than four decades. Other reliable economic indicators are flashing warning signs that the U.S. economy could soon be rolling over. The most recent core personal consumption expenditures price index data showed that This key measure of U.S. inflation was up 4.6% from a year ago. While it's down significantly from peak 2022 levels, core PCE remains well above the Fed's long-term target of 2%. That latter point is why the Fed has raised the federal funds target rate range by 5% since March 2022. But while raising rates can help lower inflation, the higher they go, the more expensive it becomes for U.S. companies to invest in innovation and growth. In addition, higher rates increase the cost of loans for regular Americans. Credit card balances, mortgage loans, and auto loans are more expensive, reducing the disposable income people have to spend, weighing on corporate earnings and stock prices. Analysts are expecting S&P 500 companies to report a 6.3% year-over-year earnings decline in the second quarter, the third consecutive quarter of negative earnings growth. The banking crisis in the U.S. has further tightened credit markets, reducing banks' willingness to lend to corporations and consumers. According to Forbes, one warning sign of a U.S. recession has been flashing for investors since mid-2022. The yield on two-year U.S. Treasury notes jumped above the yields on 10-year Treasury notes, a phenomenon known as a yield curve inversion. Inverted yield curves have historically been a strong economic recession indicator. Historically, two-thirds of the time the yield curve has inverted, the U.S. economy has fallen into a recession within 18 months. The last time the yield curve inverted was in late 2019, just a few months prior to the COVID-19 recession. In early 2023, the yield curve inverted to its deepest level since 1981. CNBC also reported it has been well reported that an economic downturn could be coming to the U.S. But the question is, when might a recession happen and how bad could it be? Many Americans fear an economic downturn could be as bad as the 2007 to 2009 financial crisis. A recent nationwide survey of 2,000 adults has found. To that point, 68% are expecting a recession in the next 6 months, and 80% of those respondents expect it to be severe.
Your option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Uh, This is the part of the speech delivered on December 17, 2008 by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, on the occasion of Eid al-Ghadir. The enemies cannot change the mentality of the people towards the Islamic Republic. What can make them change their mentality towards the Islamic Republic? What can turn the hearts of Muslims away from the Iranian nation and the Islamic Republic? Discord and religious prejudice can turn the hearts of Muslims away from the Islamic Republic. This is what you should be vigilant about. Everyone shoulders a responsibility in this regard. Writing books against Shias or Sunni Muslims or slandering the followers of other denominations will not cause any Shia or Sunni Muslims to convert to other denominations. Those who like to attract all Muslims to the Prophet's household should know that no one can be convinced to convert Shia Muslims by means of slandering or fomenting discord. Such acts will only result in enmity and conflict among Muslims. And this is exactly what the U.S. and the Zionists are looking for. Their efforts are all aimed at fomenting discord among Muslims.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
You see today that there are televised debates between Shia and Sunni Muslims in some non-Muslim European countries. They usually invite both Shia and Sunni Muslims to such programs and ask them to have a debate. What is the purpose behind these programs? Why would a Christian country, a colonialist country with an unenviable historical record, provoke a debate between Shia and Sunni Muslims? Are they after the truth? Are they after revealing the truth to their viewers? Or are they after fanning the flames of discord between Shia and Sunni? We should be vigilant about these facts and act wisely in this regard. Shia beliefs are based on a strong logic. There is a strong reasoning behind what the Shia ulama and intellectuals say in regard to Shia beliefs. But this does not give Shia Muslims the right to insult and slander Sunni Muslims. I have been informed that there are some centers which provide the funds for Shia and Sunni Muslims to publish insulting books against one another. In some cases, the funds are provided by the same center. Is this not a warning? You should be careful in this regard.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
In the limelight.
In the United States, the Justice Department has reversed its position on defending Donald Trump in a lawsuit brought by writer E. Jean Carroll, paving the way for a possible trial in January. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. The Justice Department on Tuesday, 11th of July, reversed its position that former President Donald Trump was shielded from a 2019 defamation lawsuit filed by the writer E. Jean Carroll. The government had originally argued that Donald Trump was protected from liability by the Westfall Act because he was acting as a federal employee. Under the Act, federal employees are entitled to absolute immunity from personal lawsuits by conduct occurring within the scope of their employment. Principal Deputy Assistant Attorney General Brian Boynton wrote in a letter on Tuesday, 11th of July, to attorneys for Donald Trump and E. Jean Carroll that a jury's determination in a separate civil lawsuit that Donald Trump was liable for sexual abuse and defamation of Carroll factored into the decision. That lawsuit was filed in November of 2022 and involved statements that Donald Trump made after his presidency. The allegations that prompted the statements related to a purely personal incident and alleged sexual assault that occurred decades prior to Donald Trump's presidency, Boynton wrote. That sexual assault was obviously not job-related. Writer E. Jean Carroll filed her first lawsuit in 2019 while Donald Trump was still president, and after he accused her of totally lying when she said he sexually assaulted her in a high-end New York City department store in the 1990s. In October 2021, a federal judge in New York ruled that Donald Trump was not shielded from E. Jean Carroll's lawsuit. In 2022, the Second Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals reversed the lower court's decision and suggested the Westfall Act could protect Donald Trump from liability in the case. The lawsuit has remained active and has yet to go to trial. After the jury found that Donald Trump liable in April, E. Jean Carroll amended the lawsuit, adding a new defamation claims relating to more recent statements made by Donald Trump, and he filed a countersuit. The Justice Department had initially argued that even though the former president made cruel and offensive comments in response to a very serious accusation of sexual assault, the law protecting employees like the president from such a lawsuit should be upheld. But the Justice Department reviewed that decision after the jury in E. Jean Carroll's second lawsuit in New York found Donald Trump liable for sexual abuse and defamation. Boynton wrote, "It concluded that Donald Trump had not acted out of desire to serve the government when he denied her claim." Boynton also cited statements that Donald Trump has made about E. Jean Carroll in the years since his presidency ended. These post-presidency statements, which were not before the department during the original scope certification in this case, tend to undermine the claim that the former president made very similar statements at issue in E. Jean Carroll out of a desire to serve the government, Boynton wrote. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story and tells us more. The Justice Department has reversed its position on defending Donald Trump in a lawsuit brought by writer E. Jean Carroll, paving the way for a possible trial in January. The department said in a court filing on Tuesday, 11th of July, that it could no longer conclude that Donald Trump was acting in his capacity as President of the United States when he made alleged defamatory statements about E. Jean Carroll in 2019. The former Elle magazine columnist, E. Jean Carroll, alleges that she was sexually assaulted by Donald Trump in a New York department store in 1996, a claim that he dismissed as a complete con job. E. Jean Carroll, 79 years old, has already won a second case against Donald Trump's new comments he made after he left the White House. In May, a New York jury found that Donald Trump was liable for sexual abuse and defamation and ordered him to pay her $5 million in damages. Donald Trump has sought to delay the first defamation lawsuit by claiming that he should be granted immunity because he made the comments while speaking to the media as president. At first, the Justice Department, under Donald Trump and Joe Biden, agreed with that view. But in the filing on Tuesday, 11th of July, U.S. lawyers cited the jury's verdict, Donald Trump's October deposition, and new claims. Carroll has since made that Donald Trump defamed her again with comments he made during a CNN town hall a day after the verdict. They said the new evidence suggested that Donald Trump was motivated by a personal grievance stemming from events that occurred many years prior to Donald Trump's presidency, the New York Times reported. Tuesday's reversal leaves Donald Trump, a 77-year-old, legally exposed to further damages and forced to rely on his own legal team rather than one from the government. Roberta Kaplan, a lawyer for E. Jean Carroll, welcomed the decision. Stephen Chung, a spokesperson for Donald Trump, said the step showed that the Justice Department under Joe Biden was politically weaponizing the justice system against Donald Trump. He dismissed the department's move as a partisan sham. E. Jean Carroll is seeking $10 million in damages in the first lawsuit. A 15 January 2024 trial is scheduled before the U.S. District Judge Lewis Kaplan, who handled the earlier trial. He is not related to the lawyer Roberta Kaplan. Earlier on Tuesday, 11th of July, E. Jean Carroll asked the judge in Manhattan to dismiss a counter lawsuit by Donald Trump that asserts she defamed him by repeating her claim that he raped her. E. Jean Carroll's lawyers described Trump's counter lawsuit as his latest effort to spin his trial loss by claiming that she caused him significant harm by implying in a post-trial interview that the assault was also a rape. Lawyers for E. Jean Carroll have accused Donald Trump of springing his counterclaim too late to hold up yet again this otherwise trial-ready, much-delayed case. Donald Trump is again seeking the White House and is the clear front-runner in the Republicans' primary field.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol traveled to Vilnius, Lithuania to participate in his second NATO summit as he seeks the bloc's support in deterring North Korea.
As Secretary General Stoltenberg has mentioned, we are in the situation where the security in the Atlantic cannot be separated from the security in the Indo-Pacific region.
NATO has requested South Korea send military aid to Ukraine, and while Seoul has restricted its assistance to non-lethal aid, NATO maintains interest in South Korea taking a greater role in the pact.
Nuclear and missile programs of North Korea, this affects all NATO allies and just underlines the importance of all those who believe in the rules-based order to stand together.
South Korea signed an 11-point cooperation agreement with NATO on the first day of the Vilnius summit. South Korea's President Yoon has sought to strengthen the country's alliance with the United States since coming to office in May of 2022. But now his efforts to boost defense ties and up the pressure on North Korea take on new dimensions with South Korea's cooperation agreement with NATO. However, in South Korea, the Yoon government's moves to court NATO membership draw concern.
As NATO's expansion and military progress are strengthened, and the U.S. intention to build a global alliance is strengthened, the confrontation structure of the new Cold War, where confrontations and crises take place on a daily basis, will be strengthened. Also, peace in Asia, the Pacific region, and the Korean Peninsula in Northeast Asia will be destroyed.
North Korea, meanwhile, launched a ballistic missile on the second day of the NATO summit. Tensions have been high, with the U.S. and South Korea holding large-scale military drills and planning to again soon deploy a U.S. nuclear submarine to South Korea. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Seventeen years have passed since Israel launched its biggest full-scale war against Lebanon. Apart from the 1982 invasion, the Israeli Air Force bombarded the infrastructure of Lebanon, threw cluster munitions in most of southern Lebanon, and killed over 1,200 people. The town of Bint Ishbael witnessed some of the most fierce fighting during the 2006 war. This market was turned to rubble, yet that was a cost the people of Lebanon were ready to pay if it meant that Israel would be deterred from launching another act of aggression. The fighting here turned to hand-to-hand combat at times, and the Israelis were still incapable of dislodging Hezbollah, while resistance rockets increased. Strategy experts believe that before 2006, Hezbollah's main goal was a strategy of defense. Yet the fighting capabilities of the resistance has reached an extent where launching a preemptive war against the Israelis is plausible. Israel's internal investigations into the July war proved that it was a failed mission for the regime. Yet Hezbollah's military presence remains intact and its popular support stronger than ever before. The 2006 July war gave birth to a new equilibrium in the conflict between Lebanon and Israel, and it proved that Hezbollah was not to be taken lightly. Israel's worst fear now is that any wrong move could find Hezbollah in the Galilee region. Maryam Saleh, Marun Ras, South Lebanon.
The wheels of the British economy are turning, but not fast enough. And the state of the job market is one indicator. The UK's Office for National Statistics says the unemployment rate jumped to 4% in the 3 months to May this year, up from 3.8% previously, driven by wage rises and by people out of work for up to 12 months.
Well, employment levels are high, but the trouble with Britain is we got less people working than pre-COVID. So we got record levels in employment. We're not far off the record levels. But the number of people in jobs has gone down because we've got this sort of 600,000 to 900,000 people seem to have disappeared from the workforce.
Finance Minister Jeremy Hunt has put getting Britons back into work at the heart of his plan for economic growth. Yet more than 1 million people are still unemployed. Let's see how the UK economy compares with other advanced economies. The Paris-based Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, says year-on-year inflation in the group of seven wealthy nations fell to 4.6% in May this year, down from 5.4% in April. reaching its lowest level since September 2021, making the UK the only country in the G7 where inflation is at 8.7%.
Well, the cause of inflation is not the workers asking for wage rises. It's the printing of money. You see, central banks want to blame everybody but themselves. They printed the money. The US did it, the UK did it, the Europeans did it. But, of course, Britain has the additional problem of Brexit, and that has pushed up inflation costs across the economy. It's the only explanation for the big differential.
The Bank of England, whose job it is to control inflation, has responded with increasing the interest rate 13 times so far, with more interest rate rises on the horizon. That has seen mortgage rates soar, making repayments more difficult for homeowners, many of whom who have seen their salaries squeezed by inflation, sending off a tidal wave of public sector strikes over the past year. The government here has promised labor market reforms, including expanding free childcare next year, hoping to encourage more and more people to go back to work and fill in those hundreds of thousands of vacancies that it says are fueling inflation. But the fact remains that the rate of economic growth and inflation in the UK remain particularly bad compared to similar economies. Saeed Bourizza, London.
To protest last week's burning of the Holy Quran in Stockholm, the Ansarullah-backed Yemeni government has officially banned all Swedish imports into Yemen. This means the Yemeni market will no longer carry almost 500 Swedish brands. The desecration of the Quran has sparked Muslim outrage and condemnation against the Swedish government, who continue to insist the Sacrilegious Act is a part of freedom of speech.
It is a revolutionary Yemeni people who decided that Swedish products should be banned from Yemen. We also call on all neighboring countries and the Islamic world to take a decisive stand against this act of aggression against Islam. At the very least, Muslim nations should ban all Swedish products.
According to the Minister of Trade, the Sana'a government has put together an economic plan to boost the battered Yemeni economy and compensate for the products which have been banned. They believe this will help Yemen move towards self-sufficiency.
The ban on Swedish products only took place after much research and study on pragmatic solutions needed to replace the banned products. There are going to be many positive steps and decisions the government will take in order to increase and promote local production to stimulate the economy.
That has been involved in what they described as a war on Islam.
The banning of products from Sweden, Israel, the United States and the UK is an obligation on all Muslims worldwide. This is because of the hate and aggression these nations have toward Muslims and Islam. These are people who do not respect the religion of Allah. The banning of products from these nations is a positive step forward to teach them a lesson so that we can depend on ourselves and increase local production and industry.
The Ansarullah-backed Yemeni government said it is funding plans and initiatives to revive Yemeni production. This is necessary in order to provide food security for millions of Yemenis who have suffered tremendously from food shortages caused by the 8 year of Saudi-imposed blockade on Yemen.
The fact is, although boycotting goods from nations that support insulting Islam has some impact, it is simply not enough. This is why the Sana'a government is calling for a united Islamic front to cut off all ties with Sweden and any nation involved in sacrilegious acts against Islam. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
In an unexpected move, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said European countries need to pave the way for Ankara's bid to join the EU in return for the Turkish parliament approving Sweden's accession to NATO. Erdogan made the comments at the airport before heading towards Lithuania to attend the bloc's summit. Ankara has been holding off its approval for Sweden's NATO membership along with Hungary, while all other members have already approved its accession. Hungary has signaled that it will follow Erdogan's lead should he give the green light for Sweden to join the military alliance.
Turkey.
I'm calling here for these countries that are making Turkey wait for the door of European Union for more than 50 years. First, come and open the way for Turkey at the European Union, and then we will open the way for